In studio, as promised, I have Cormac Moore, a historian in residence with the Dublin City Libraries, a north central area. Well, good break for you, Cormac. Welcome back.
Thanks very much, Noel.
And I suppose we go straight into it. We're going to be talking about the legacy of John Redmond. A lot of people wouldn't have heard about John Redmond, so give us the background to him.
Yes, John Redmond, he was leader of the Irish Parliamentary Party, and that was the biggest political party in Ireland from the times of Isaac Butt and particularly Charles Stewart Parnell. And once Parnell, the divorce scandal came out about Parnell in 1890 and his subsequent death a year later, Redmond was on the Parnell faction, but it was a very divided party. But he reunified the party in 1900. He became leader of the reunified party in 1900. And I suppose his most spectacular political success was the election of 1910, when the Irish Party held the balance of power yet again in Westminster. And as a result of that, the third Home Rule Bill was introduced in 1912, okay, which would have given Home Rule to Ireland. So it was considered a huge political success by Redmond. And he led a very strong, cohesive party machine in Westminster. He was considered the dictator from Dublin. But he's originally from Wexford. But
did he come from a political family?
Yes, he did. Yeah, okay. He's all of his family were politicians. He's very, very steeped in politics. I think his father, I think, was actually the first Irish Party Home Rule MP elected. Very, very steep in politics. But his legacy now has been tainted, and he's almost a forgotten man.
You're talking about the family there, if you don't mind me interrupting. It's just that there seemed to be a lot of conflict within the family itself, with the different sort of in each side of the barrier. The mother had her own views compared sort of in opposition to the son and maybe to the father as well. Would that be true?
Yeah, well the mother was a Protestant, would probably be considered a Southern Unionist. Mm-hmm. And he himself, his second wife was a Protestant as well. So he himself, although he wanted home rule, he did get on very well with Southern Unionists. But it was the Ulster Unionists who in many ways proved his kind of undoing, should we say, in terms of legacy. And even before he died, his popularity plummeted because of how he reacted to the Ulster question, which was the and to be fair to Redmond, anyone that had to deal with Ulster before never had to deal with it in such a strong manner as in 1912, because there were two home rules before, home rule bills beforehand in 1886 and 1891. Both the first one didn't even pass the House of Parliament. So even though there was Ulster Unionist opposition, they didn't need to be that strong or forceful, because it didn't pass through the House of Parliament, so the bill was dead. And then in 1891, it passed the House of Parliament, but it didn't pass the House of Lords. Mm. Now, under the new arrangements from 1910, this was worked out between the Liberal government and the Irish Party, that the veto of the House of Lords could only last for 3 years. Before that, it could last indefinitely. If the House of Lords vetoed the bill, it was dead. But after 1910, any bill that the House of Lords defeated, it could only do so for 3 years. And after that, it would become law. So that was a big change. So that mobilised Ulster Unionists. They knew they were in big trouble then. Okay. That Home Rule was going to come in. That's when they set up the Ulster Volunteer Force, the UVF, and subsequently we had the Irish Volunteers. So Redmond had real big problems with Ulster. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much every other politician or Irish politician, they didn't deal with Ulster very well, and kind of didn't understand the absolute huge opposition to any form of home rule from Ulster. And that's why his legacy is tainted, because he did accept partition. He accepted temporarily first in 1914, but then he actually seemed to be faltering all of the time, and his reputation plummeted because of that. Okay. And also he supported the First World War as well. Now, when he supported initially, most people answered his call. Like, he did a very famous speech in Woodenbridge in Wicklow, where he asked people to sign up and join the army. It was considered it was going to be a very short war. It was going to be a very swift war. that never transpired, you know, lasted for 4 long years. With many more deaths for Irish people than the other conflicts that happened, mm-hmm. you know, including the Rising, the War of Independence, Civil War, and so on. Like 40, it's estimated that anywhere between 30 and 40,000 Irish people died in the First World War. And he has to take, a big kind of culpability, I suppose, of getting many people to enlist in the war.
And his association with Parnell, would that have had any hits on him as well as regards popularity?
Initially, he did. Okay. Because, you know, obviously the Catholic Church was very anti-Parnell after the divorce proceedings between the O'Shea's came out. But, you know, as I said, by 1900, though, he had taken over the party and reunified it. So, you know, and he actually did achieve a lot in terms of had very strong legislative achievements. Like, he did a lot in land reform. You know, and getting tenants to own their own land. Mm-hmm. His kind of when he was leader of the Irish Party, it was the first time that there was a public ownership, you know, public housing was offered to people. It was obviously a very hot topic at the moment. So that was the first party to introduce that. He was responsible for the National University of Ireland, you know, which is UCD, UCC, UCG, mm-hmm. and Maynooth. So a lot of significant achievements, and that this party achieved under his leadership, mm-hmm. That have definitely bettered the lives of
that's quite evident today. And
exactly,
do you think it's just because of the latter and his involvement with the North and all that sort of carry on and coming up to the First World War? Do you think that all that tainting is what sort of caused this disfavor?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was the First World War. The First World War became more and more unpopular as it progressed, and when more casualties were coming back, you know, whether dead or wounded. But also, partition as well. His stance on partition really was a very unpopular stance. And, he was deeply unpopular at the time of his death. He was so unpopular that, his family did not have his funeral cortege go to Dublin City Centre because, they feared for the cortege. So,
wow.
Yeah, so he was that unpopular. And he was a broken man when he died. Even personally, you know, he had a lot of setbacks in 1917, the year before his death. His daughter, 32 years of age, died in New York, you know, unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. His brother, Willie, died in the front in June 1917. And then, and, you know, a good friend of his as well, MP in Kilkenny, died. He actually broke down at the funeral in July 1917. So he had a lot of personal setbacks, and he actually did die.
Seems
a broken
like he
man.
Was relatively young himself when he died.
62. Yeah, relatively young, all right. Yes,
And was he responsible for the genesis of Sinn Féin to an extent?
Well, you could say that, I don't know if you can say he was responsible for them doing so well, but definitely the Irish Party were considered very weak, and he seemed to be copying Sinn Féin as well in some ways. Mm-hmm. Sinn Féin always had an abstentious policy with Westminster. It was only after conscription that the Irish Party decided to leave Westminster, so they were kind of copying Sinn Féin. And even with conscription, this is after Redmond had died, but with conscription, the Irish Party fully supported the anti-conscription campaign. However, because most of the leaders of Sinn Féin were arrested by the British government, mm-hmm. for the German plot, they were seen as the ones who were really anti-conscription, whereas the Irish Party were, none of them were in prison, so they were considered to be pro-conscription, even though they weren't. So there was definitely a kind of a popular swing towards Sinn Féin. And his support for the war, and then he did not want partition, absolutely not, but he seemed to compromise and accept it. Mm-hmm. And that was a very, very unpopular stance that he took. Whereas what did Sinn Féin do, though, when it comes to partition? They put their heads in the sands, you know, they didn't deal with it either. They never dealt with the Ulster Unionists, you know, they fought their own war and felt once Britain left, and then they could deal with Ulster, which wasn't very realistic either. They didn't have a clear, coherent policy of Ulster. Nobody really did. So can Redmond be really blamed above all others for partition? I think that would be very unfair.
Okay, but he died 9 months before his own party. The party was annihilated anyway.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So he didn't come to see that. But he seemed to have some a contradiction of his career. I'm just thinking of his last words, and I'm just wondering how relevant it is today. The people have grown tired of the monotony of being served for 20, 30 or 40 years by the same men in Parliament. Let the Irish people replace us by all means by other, and I hope better, men if they choose. I'd like to see that something like that today, because it seems to be stagnant at the moment over the past many years as well, with a lot of the people sort of regurgitating relatives of politicians. There's nobody really new coming out as well, and so that's his words has resonance for me today.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he wanted that now. Maybe he was saying that's what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. If, and I think what he did claim, and he was prophetic in some ways, that the way the British government, like the British government were in many ways responsible for destroying the Irish Party, because, you know, conscription was a terrible idea. You know, there was when Lloyd George introduced it in April 1918. Mm-hmm. So basically, what he was saying, because Russia were out of the war now, and Germany were able to take all of their troops from the Eastern Front to the Western Front, did a huge offensive in March 1918. Mm-hmm. The Lloyd George goes, we need conscriptions. We need 200,000 men from Ireland. Mm-hmm. So he said anyone between 18 and 50 from Ireland had to conscript. Everyone within Ireland, you know, the church, Catholic church, businesses, trade unions, the main political parties, the Irish Party and Sinn Féin, were totally opposed to conscription. But because the Britons seemed to suggest that it was Sinn Féin who was more anti-conscription than the Irish Party, that led to unpopularity of the Irish Party. And a lot of decisions that the British government were very duplicitous with the way they dealt with mm-hmm. the Irish Party. And Redmond said himself, you know, you are actually, putting the Irish electorate into the hands of the extremists mm-hmm. By the methods, by the lies, by the backtracking that they did. So Redmond felt that he was completely served badly by the British government.
Okay, and apart from us talking about him today, is he mentioned in any tomes, any books as such?
Well, recently, yeah, there's been a couple of books. You know, there's a new book now by Alvin Jackson on judging Redmond and Edward Carson, mm-hmm. the Ulster Unionist leader. There have been a couple of biographies on him recently. So definitely with the whole decade of centenaries, you know, I think people aren't just looking at, you know, the Easter Rising or the War of Independence. Mm-hmm. They are looking at the First World War. They're looking at the Irish parties, its demise,
and a lot of individuals, stuff. Of course, that were quite.
And former teacher John Bruton is a big champion of Redmond. So he likes to talk about Redmond at every given opportunity that he gets.
I'd say that has probably something to do with the land reform.
Well, I think it's actually more Bruton is probably one of the people who was singularly opposed to the Easter Rising, and he always felt that we would have got more, if not the same, through Redmond than we got through the Sinn Féin or through the Republican movement in terms of from Britain. Mm. Yeah, that's his opinion.
And I suppose the same thing as well as applies when you think about the Rising, that a lot of the general public were against the Rising, and if the British hadn't shot themselves in the foot with the executions, we mightn't have the men as martyrs today. It's all, you know.
Yeah, well, it was the British reaction that really seemed to have swung the public reaction in favour of the rebels. But I think Bruton, though, is kind of too biased towards Redmond and mm-hmm. doesn't see any fault. He did change his mind too often on partition, and he did actually, he in many ways made sure that it would happen, because once he compromised, once he said, okay, we'll take a temporary form of partition, then partition was on the table.
Yes, yeah.
You know, he, and in fairness, it was a very difficult choice he faced, and there was no certain outcomes. However, once he agreed that, look, there can be a temporary partition, exclusion of the Ulster counties, of four Ulster counties, then six Ulster counties, then it was on the table, and they couldn't really go back from that afterwards. And that's why a lot of people still have a big issue with Redmond. And not to mention, people say he's a pacifist, he was a constitutional politician. Yes, he did call for people to fight in the war.
Do you think
for many more deaths than there were in the Irish Revolutionary years?
Yeah, for instance, you mentioned the war there, Cormac. If there hadn't been the World War, do you think there would have been the civil war with North and South here?
There was a very chance of that, yeah. It definitely was not looking good, because the reason why Home Rule wasn't introduced was because of the war. So it was actually put on hold. The Ulster Unionists were, they definitely looked like they were going to fight. They were definitely armed, and they had support of the Conservative Party in Britain as well. They had a lot of support of the British Army as well in many respects. There was a mutiny in the Curragh. Senior British officers who said they would not fight against the Ulster Volunteer Force. So, mm-hmm.
Would you would you put him down as a politician of note of history?
Oh, absolutely, of course. Yeah, okay. No, he's a like people often think that between the years of Parnell and the Easter Rising, it was kind of this big vacuum, but it wasn't though. You know, a lot of achievements, like and actually the real living standards of people. They definitely did contribute enormously towards, you know, in terms of, you know, in people owning their own land. You know, that was a huge, huge achievement. You know, the National University is another big achievement. And like he introduced, was responsible for the old age pension, national insurance been introduced. You know, there's a lot of really strong legislative achievements that he can put to his name. So yeah, he's a person of
any
note.
Any plaques to him or anything? Anything that recognises all of that anywhere apart from in a history book?
Well, there's been a few events this month, you know, to mark his the anniversary of his death. But no, as I said, he has been forgotten by many people. The reason was some controversy there a few years ago, at the start of the decade of centenaries, they had a outside of College Green, they had a poster of four main leaders, and Redmond was one of them, and that was seen as a very unpopular choice by many people in the public. That
really,
this is the man who, you know. Introduced partition, you could say, or got so many people to fight in the war as well. So you know, he's still in some quarters, he still is very unpopular. However, you know,
he sounds like a very interesting but complicated man to an extent. Who
but his choices were complicated too. You know, there wasn't many easy choices. Look, we all know now what happened with the First World War, but when it started, it was seen as this glorious war. There definitely was this contradiction, though, that to save little Belgium, you know, to save small nations, you know, when many would argue that Ireland was a small nation, not being allowed its right to be a small nation.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
And yet they were fighting with Britain. So, look, we I think many people would agree now that it was a terrible war, and it seemed like a very unnecessary war. At the time, that was different. And at the time, it seemed it was a very kind of a normal reaction for many people to go and fight in a war. Whereas now, it just would be, you know, who would want to go and fight in a war now? But back then, it seems a very noble thing to do. And that's why so many people did enlist to fight in the war.
And of course, apart from the nobility of it as well, as far as Ireland as well is concerned, I'm sure in England as well, there was lots of people for financial reasons.
Actually, a lot of people would say the biggest reason why people enlisted was economic reasons. They got a really good salary. They got you know, obviously fed and looked after whilst they're on the front and in the army, and their families were looked after as well. Mm-hmm. They were looked after well too. So and Redmond honestly did believe this would actually solve the Ulster issue. We're going to be united with our Ulster Unionist brethren. You know, this will resolve the issue that, you know, we are the same. We are going to be unified, and we can have the Home Rule together.
Okay.
And he definitely wasn't right in that.
He underestimated up north Carson and all the rest of it.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, it's been terrific. Is there any specific book written on him, or is he just part of the centenary?
No, there's a couple of books. There's a, I think Terence Dooley has written one, and then Dermot Mulready has written a two-volume series on him. As I said, there's one now on by Alvin Jackson, which has just been published. Actually, I think Leo Varadkar launched it there recently in Dublin.
Okay.
And that's judging Redmond and Carson. So it's the Royal Irish Academy series of judging. You know, they'd have judging Dev and judging, you know, Lamass and Cosgrave, and now they've got judging Redmond and Carson. That sounds like a very interesting book.
It does, it certainly does. Anyway, so I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time, Cormac. Welcome back.
Thanks very much.
It's always a great pleasure having you in that.